Blog Talk Radio.
Can you hear it?
Mm-hmm.
I can't.
Why not?
Don't know.
You are listening to WithInsightsRadio.com on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Your free online holistic publication resource radio for trusting your intuition, achieving self-discovery, and following your soul self.
I can't hear it either.
I can.
Good evening. This is the Menha Radio again. I'm Chief Cloudpiler, and I'm here with Chief Willem Otken. And we are the Nemenha Indigenous Traditional Organization. Welcome to our show tonight. And appreciate you tuning in. Hey, one of the things that we run into as practitioners in natural medicine all the time is that we get, you know, and you hear this a lot in conversations that you're overhearing. Someone will complain to someone else of some, you know, some symptom.
Right.
And that person, you know, you can just watch them go right to their telephone. And so they find out what needs to be done and they diagnose them.
Right.
And they give them, so they tell them to go buy something, or they'll even take them by the hand to the health food store and they'll help them buy it. We have that happen all the time. And very often there are people who don't know what they're talking about.
How about usually?
Well, now let's be more generous. But today in the office, in clinic, we had an interesting situation. I'm assisting a supplicant with a micro video presentation. Mm-hmm. That's what we do, is we help an individual create a movie of their own blood, and they burn it on a disc. And, you know, in that sense, we're producers.
Right.
And so then we take that disc and we throw it up on the screen, and then we can have a discussion about it. And we train people to know what they're looking at when they're looking at a sample of blood or saliva or pond water or whatever. And today there was a wonderful person who came in, and we were seeing some things. And she happened to have an individual with her who had also been in on an earlier date. And so it was difficult to sit and listen to another person talk about what they're seeing on the screen as if they're some kind of expert because they've seen it once.
Right.
And I think this is a symptom of our times. In a lot of ways, technology can be more of a hindrance to us sometimes than a help. Here's a situation where we're looking at a complex system, a complex living system, on this video.
You hadn't even finished recording the micro videograph.
No, we were. You were
halfway through just panning through the sample, doing cross sections of the sample.
You know, and behind me, I could hear, "Ooh, and that means this, and we don't want to see that, and when there's that, there's la la la." And she just went on like she was some kind of an expert. And I had to say, "Well, you know, probably ought to be mindful," or I think I said careful.
Careful.
How much suggestions or how much commentary or the kind of commentary you make based upon your
you were so generous.
So, you know, on your level of competence and expertise and you know, we do teach this. We have apprenticeships where you can learn this, and we certainly love to invite you to do that.
Uh-huh.
But you know, it was a, I guess that was maybe the kindest "please be quiet" I've ever
that was pretty
but
kind.
Sometimes you just feel like you need to do that, especially when you're sitting in a restaurant or something and somebody talks about, you know, their dry, itchy, scaly skin. You know, what do I need to do about that? I just don't know what to do about that. And the person who, you know, is a receptionist for a collection agency gets on the internet and prescribes something for them,
uh-huh.
diagnoses what the problem. Well, here's what, this is what you have, and this is what's causing that. And it says right here that you need to la la la. And so they go to the health food store and they buy some coconut oil colloidal silver tea tree combination and, you know, with neem and throw it on their skin. And, you know, that's a big problem. That's a big problem. We have so many people who, because of the availability of information on the internet, somehow have the idea that they can take a person's potentially life in their hands. Because we're talking about somebody's health here. You know, we're talking about some pretty complex issues. So let's take an individual that we've just an example. This is just an example I'm using. We're not going to use any names or anything like that. But let's just take a look at what would happen if we take every single thing that troubles them physically and we rush to the internet on our telephone or something. And you have your telephone handy, don't you?
Always, always.
Well, pull it out and let me ask this. You know, just in the course of our conversation, let's say that the individual complains of fatigue and sleeplessness. So just Google that in while we're, you know, just debating this. Fatigue and sleeplessness. Now, understand one thing, dear listener. I've always wanted to say that, dear reader, you know, because you, dear reader, dear, you know, that's a very old style of literature and you run into like,
yeah.
But to understand one thing, fatigue is something that the body causes, that your ever conscious mind and body and spirit do when there is a definite need for you to stop. Fatigue is something that causes you to sit down, to lay down, to fall down, to rest, so that your body has a chance to possibly heal itself. And so fatigue in and of itself is not necessarily a symptom and should not necessarily be treated. But what does the internet say you should do about fatigue?
Oh, depends on who you're asking. The internet produces.
Well, let's just throw something out there. That the one of the first things that you'll see is...
Once we get past all the ads, of course.
Well, yeah, the advertisements. So you got to pay. You got to pay for it somehow.
We have the... DrWheel.com autoimmune disorders.
DrWheel.com.
Yeah.
Autoimmune disorders. And so what that means is that fatigue is an autoimmune disorder, right?
That's what he does. Okay. Chronic fatigue syndrome is not classified as a disease, but the term is used by many healthcare providers when a patient experiences unexplained persistent fatigue for more than 6 months. That's the official
definition. So this is Andrew Weil. This is the famous guy.
Yeah.
You know, medical doctor
and
off the reservation.
I've read from him has been pretty good.
Not too bad. He's a medical doctor off the reservation, has, you know, clinics, or a pretty expensive one, actually. And so here I'm in the restaurant with you, and you talk about fatigue, and one of the most qualified guys in the nation says that this is chronic fatigue syndrome. Fatigue is chronic fatigue syndrome, not really a disease, but there's something to do, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And we're going to just kind of skim over the whole lifestyle reformation article that he has on here, because that's extensive, and that takes way too much work, and nobody has time for that.
Right, but we would
get to
the bottom.
So we're going to get to nutrition and supplements.
Yeah, there you go.
Because we are in a restaurant, or we're in a health food store with a deli.
Right.
You know, and we're right close, either up the street or just a couple of blocks away from our local Mama Jean's or Whole Foods market.
Yeah, our health food store. Where we
supplements we can get to work on today. The lifestyle stuff we can work on as we go, right?
Which is, yeah, yeah.
All right, so supplements. First, we need to make sure we're getting vitamin B.
Vitamin B. Does it just say vitamin B?
It says vitamin, it's an antioxidant vitamin formula with vitamin B and other vitamin B complex ingredients.
Okay, so it's a vitamin B complex.
So it's a complex.
Okay, so you got to have vitamin B complex. Go ahead.
And Eleuthero, 500 milligrams, 3 times daily. So there's a bottle.
Eleuthero. Go ahead. I'm just going to write down.
CoQ10, coenzyme CoQ10.
CoQ10.
Looks like that'd be 3 capsules a day.
Uh-huh. Okay. Keep going.
And you got to eat 2 cloves of raw garlic a day.
Raw garlic.
That's actually really good for you, by the way.
Well, yeah. If you can.
As a food, if you can stomach
if
it.
If you can stand the body odor and the bad breath. But, you know, it's good food. I put it in other things because it moderates it. But raw garlic, okay.
And astragalus root.
Astragalus. Keep going.
And stay hydrated.
And drink water.
Drink water. Okay. That's on the one website.
Okay. So let's just go with that. here we go. Fatigue, then, if we're saying that, you know, we can get on the internet and all these things we can go down to the health food store and buy, right?
Oh, yeah.
So vitamin
B. Even your water.
Yeah, even the water. You can buy bottled water. The vitamin B complex, what does a vitamin B complex do for you?
Well, it fights fatigue. It's good for fatigue.
It's good for fatigue. But, you know, how do we get vitamin B complex in our food?
Most of our vitamin B and vitamin B complex comes from the grains and the legumes that we eat.
Grains, legumes, and to a,
some nuts.
To a limited degree, the nuts,
yeah.
And some meats if you're a meat eater. Okay, so let's go on. That's specific for fatigue. So what Dr. Wheel is saying is that you're not getting what you need in your food. Your food is crappy. And so what I need to do is supplement that with what you ought to be getting if you are buying decent food. So if this comes from the grains, the legumes, and the nuts, and to a very small degree, some of the meats, what should I be buying? Should I go through my cupboards and replace everything that has any kind of grain with, you know, organic grain products, or what should I do? I mean, nowadays you can't eat any of that stuff, right?
Why?
Because it's because everything you eat's got to be gluten free.
Of course.
I mean,
yeah, of course.
Everyone is gluten intolerant. We talked about that.
Yeah, we have.
I mean, so that's across the board. We all are gluten intolerant. We should never, ever, ever eat grains with gluten again, right? If that's the case, though, we're going to have to take a look at our B complex vitamins. Because the vast majority of them come from wheat.
And if they don't come from wheat directly, they come from the bacterial byproducts, the waste products of bacteria that are eating wheat.
Yeah, mainly the beer-making process. So it's coming from beer.
Mm-hmm.
Why shouldn't I just go drink the beer and get my vitamin B? Well, that's an irrelevant.
That's, yeah.
You'd
have to drink like 3 cases of beer to get therapeutic
dose
of
more
vitamin
than that.
B.
You wouldn't even get that much of vitamin B. Folates maybe, but you know, but Dr. Wheel is essentially indicating, he's inferring that your B complex is important. You're not getting it in your food.
Mm-hmm.
You can't anyway because you can't eat gluten.
No.
And you know, so you got to take a supplement for it.
Uh-huh.
So, okay, and all the vitamin Bs, how many are there?
12 that I know of.
15, yeah, something like that. All of them, and we're going to have to trust him or his favorite manufacturer, his favorite corporation, to make sure that we're getting the B vitamins we need for our fatigue.
But if I'm a smart consumer, I will go down the aisles. I will not buy it from his company because I know that he's just getting it private labeled from who knows who.
Yeah, ABC
wherever,
company somewhere.
You know, it's all white label. It's all private label.
Right.
So I can go to my local health food store if I'm a smart consumer and, you know, make sure the labels all check out as far as ingredients and dosages, and I'll probably even get a better dosage for a better price.
Probably by choosing someone else.
And I'll be so satisfied by that consumer decision that I'll be very comfortable purchasing probably 2 bottles of the stuff to last me a couple of months.
Yeah, instead of going down some of the other aisles and finding out what food you might be able to eat to do the same thing.
No, we skimmed over the whole lifestyle reformation.
Oh, yeah.
Thing, right?
Oh, yeah, these are things that, that's right, yeah, these are bottles. Bottles. Okay, so let's go off the vitamin Bs. Those used to be called the stress tab type
yes.
vitamins. Because
some of them still are.
Yeah, you know, it's a complex of vitamins that tend to be good for combating stress. What's interesting is that in Eastern and Western Europe, these were the vitamins that tended to prevent violence during the winter time when you were holed up in the cottage. It tends to calm, and these were the reasons that pastry and bread were so important to Northern and Western Europe in the wintertime more than ever. Hardly ate it. Pastries
mm-hmm.
during the summertime, you never saw it. For one thing, you know, there was no refrigeration, so everything
right.
ran away.
Yeah.
But very, very interesting that you have northern countries producing a lot of grain-based
mm-hmm.
pastries eaten in the wintertime because it controlled the cabin fever. So there is something to this. Dr. Will is not incorrect, but my thinking is, you know, your neighbor in the restaurant should probably know why vitamin B is important, not just that Dr. Wheel says so.
Uh-huh.
You go through the internet and that's what you get. Every single one of these will tell you what to swallow, but not why.
Right.
Why it's important.
Like, why is vitamin B so effective, in sufficient quantities when it comes to some forms of stress and some forms of anxiety.
Right.
Not all forms, but some forms of it.
But
very effective.
You know, here's an interesting thing. The symptom was not stress. The symptom was not anxiety.
It was chronic fatigue.
The symptom was merely fatigue.
Yes.
The reader is going to assume that because you mentioned fatigue to your neighbor, it's chronic.
Yep.
You
automatically.
Know, automatically assume that you have chronic fatigue, which is an autoimmune disorder, even though he says it's not a named disorder.
It's not a specific disease. It's a disorder.
Yeah, but look at the heading. Where is he talking about this? Dr. Wheel and autoimmune disorders.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next thing is Eleuthero. Now, we use Eleuthero. Eleuthero is Siberian ginseng.
Yeah.
Why?
We love Eleuthero.
So we do.
Stuff.
We do. What do we use Eleuthero for?
Well, we use it to mitigate and reduce excessive cortisol production.
Right. As a result of the fight or flight hormone cascade.
Yeah.
But in the lunch conversation, I mean, does that even come into the lunch conversation? The symptom was fatigue. And so you should be taking, automatically, you should be taking something for the fight or flight syndrome.
And I'll bet the person across the table looking on their phone didn't ask the person mentioning fatigue whether they were taking Zoloft.
Don't need to, right. Well, here's the problem. They don't need to ask the person across the table from them anything because they are asking Dr. Wheel.
Correct.
All of a sudden, it's not about the person with fatigue. It's about the doctor on the internet and what you need to swallow. Eleutherococcus is an adaptogen. It helps you adapt to change. It shuts down, doesn't really shut down, it turns down the volume.
Yeah, dials it down.
Down the volume of the cortisol type hormones, about 30 of them that your body produces as a result of the fight or flight hormone, or the fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hormone response. So here's another issue. What if the person is fatigued and is already on some
SSRI like Zoloft? Yeah.
Yeah, Paxil, Zoloft.
Yeah.
Any of them. Xanax.
Well, Eleuthero is one of those herbs, one of the few herbs that has been closely studied in clinical trials with regard to interactions with certain medications. Because it had been used for so long in certain parts of the world for stress and depression and anxiety and recovery from workout and injury, it was used in some of these clinical trials and interacted with Zoloft, but not in the way lots of people like to think. It actually increased the effectiveness of Zoloft,
right,
rendering the very precise dosing of the drug
off.
Incorrect.
Right. It pushed the dosage off. There's the problem with the SSRIs is that dosage, and every psychiatrist engaged in psychopharmaceuticals is going to agree, dosage is king.
Yeah.
We're working out the proper dosage for an individual is very, very important. So across the table at lunch, you're reading Dr. Wheel, and Dr. Wheel knows, and we can be confident that Dr. Wheel knows what he's talking about, and so we don't have to have any real competence, do we?
Nope.
So a competent practitioner would think to ask the question, are you taking any drugs presently? An incompetent practitioner across the lunch board is not going to ask.
It's just just going to read what's available or quote what's available about
on the phone
those things
on the phone
and tell them what is available to buy.
Yeah, because competence is not important. You have every single bit of information that's available right there in front of you. What in the world do you need a competent practitioner for? Every single bit of information is available. So let's go on to the next one. CoQ10 is given to everyone.
Uh-huh.
Across the board, because everyone in the U.S. is going to be diabetic.
Uh-huh.
Everyone in the U.S. is going to have heart disease. Everyone in the U.S. is going to be fat. And everyone in the U.S. is going to have high blood pressure. And so you have to have CoQ10.
CoQ10, yeah.
I mean, that is just given to everybody. We might as well just concede that for whatever ailment you have, CoQ10 is just going to be a prescription.
Right, yeah.
You know? Next one.
Luckily, it's also one of those vitamins that it's very, very difficult to overdo. So,
oh, yeah, because you'll just pee it out. I mean, you will void the extra. The same thing goes with garlic. Garlic is just good food. And so in this, we have something that is a very good idea. I'm not sure it's a great idea. Well, for fatigue, you might could... perk up somebody from some fatigue by eating garlic because of the, what did it say? What did you say? Two or three whole cloves?
Two whole cloves
two
a day.
Two whole cloves a day.
That's a lot of allicin.
It is. It is. And what's that for in terms of fatigue?
Well, it's
I mean, it's pretty exciting if you eat that all at once.
Yeah, yeah. It's also a in that kind of a dosage, it's also a fairly decent stimulant.
For a minute.
For a minute.
But that's it.
But it also boosts circulation.
It helps circulation. So if you're tired, if you're fatigued mm-hmm. because you're not getting enough oxygen, the garlic may actually...
You've got a boost of oxygen.
The garlic may actually be doing something
also,
there.
Also, garlic is fairly alkalizing to a certain point. So you've got some boost.
Another boost.
Another boost to your
A metabolic
your daily.
Boost, yeah. But he's suggesting it... not for fatigue, but for chronic fatigue syndrome.
Right.
What is chronic fatigue syndrome?
It's a list of symptoms that indicate chronic fatigue syndrome. That's what chronic fatigue syndrome is.
You're talking about stress.
Yeah.
I mean, you're talking about the fight or flight response, and that's why we have things like adaptogens and vitamin B, the stress vitamins. And we're not talking about simply, you know, I'm tired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get on the telephone and you look up tired.
Well, I'm going to get on the phone and look up chronic fatigue again.
There you go.
Because we like it. We don't like it.
We like to treat it. Well, you do that. I'm going to go on to the next one, astragalus. Now, astragalus is mildly adaptogenic, but it's also an immune enhancer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to call it a drug. It's a plant drug. Very, very effective.
Yeah.
So if you're fatigued, if you're dang tired... and you mentioned it at lunch, you may have your incompetent practitioner across the table from you, you know, suggest that you need to increase your immune response because that's what's making you tired, I guess. It could be, but how does your lunch guest or your lunch partner know that?
There's no way for them to know it.
Well, it is, yeah, absolutely, because they got on the telephone and read Dr. Wheel.
Well, first they're going to look at, you know, remedies for the fatigue. And then when they have some questions, they're going to go to the description of fatigue symptoms.
Right.
The trouble with the symptoms of chronic fatigue is that they encompass a huge array of symptoms.
Yeah, let's go ahead and read them.
Well, pain areas in joints or muscles, whole body fatigue, inability to exercise, or general malaise, cognitive confusion, forgetfulness or lack of concentration, excess sleepiness or sleep disturbances, mood swings, anxiety or apprehension, also common in depression, headache, muscle weakness, sensitivity to pain, or frequent sore throat. How many disorders and diseases, even a basic flu infection?
Well, what they're describing
these
there,
symptoms.
What they're describing there is Epstein-Barr.
Yeah.
The frequent, I mean, that's what he's talking about here is Epstein-Barr virus. That causes chronic fatigue syndrome.
But that's not in his article.
It's not in the article, and it's not in what your lunch guest described.
But see, chronic fatigue syndrome is associated with Epstein-Barr or cytomegalovirus is a symptom of the infection,
right.
Symptom of the disease.
Right.
The disease is what the medical profession would treat. The disease is what... a good naturopath would treat.
Right, so now go on your phone and
search
anemia. Anemia.
Anemia.
Because, you know, it's a matter of pushing the right button.
Oh, yeah.
And your lunch companion chose, well, in this hypothetical situation, your lunch companion chose Dr. Wheel and autoimmune disease.
Mostly because that's the first thing
It does, because he's really got somebody on the computer pumping it out so that he's the most popular pick. But what are the symptoms of anemia, according to your phone?
According to phone, symptoms include dizziness, fatigue, lightheadedness, malaise, or weakness, or fast heart rate, heart palpitations, brittle nails, frequent headache, pallor, or shortness of breath, to name a few.
So half of those things are right in the area, the same symptoms of chronic fatigue. Chronic fatigue isn't necessarily associated with anemia, right? But fatigue is.
But fatigue is.
Fatigue, dizziness, brain fog, memory loss.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, malaise.
Yeah.
What is malaise, by the way?
What, malaise?
Yeah.
It is a general inability or to feel well. You just do not feel well.
Right. You just want to sit down, fall down. Yeah. Sit down, lay down, fall down. This is what your body is causing. It is a symptom of so many problems that we can't call it a disease itself. So here's a problem. Your lunch companion, in her incompetence, goes to a competent practitioner on the internet without having to actually commit to any kind of interchange with the practitioner, who would have the competence to ask other questions to differentiate between chronic fatigue syndrome, which is viral, and anemia, which could be a vitamin B12, folic acid, or iron deficiency.
Any one or a combination of the three.
Or it could be persistent bleeding in the gut. So let's go there. one of the causes of anemia, and this a competent practitioner is going to be asking questions about this. One of the causes of anemia very often is persistent hidden bleeding. So would a vitamin B complex solve the bleeding, which is causing the anemia, which is causing fatigue?
No.
No, I'm not talking chronic fatigue. I'm just talking fatigue.
Or just the symptom, fatigue.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it won't.
Why not?
Well, if there's bleeding in the gut, and if there is that kind of dysbiosis in the bowel, the ability of your body's ability to properly assimilate and utilize nutrients that you're ingesting is reduced dramatically, drastically.
Could be compromised. Yeah, it could be compromised. But we always give vitamin B12, folic acid, and iron in the case of anemia. Why wouldn't the B complex do the trick?
Because it doesn't do what the other things do. Vitamin B.
Because in anemia, if you take vitamin B12 alone, it doesn't trigger the production of red blood cells.
No.
It does with the combination of B12, folic acid, and iron. It's like taking folic acid alone.
Yeah.
Or like taking iron alone. You know, if you give yourself a whole bunch more iron and your body is producing enough red blood cells, you'll bump up your hemoglobin, right? But if you are anemic, if you, for whatever reason, are not producing the right red blood cells, or you're constantly losing them, like with gut bleeding.
Right, yeah.
And believe me, that does not require an ulcer. It could be an abrasion or even just a sore spot. I mean, how many of us have skinned our knees on the sidewalk? We did not have a laceration, and yet we bled, right?
I wore knee pads.
You wore knee pads. Yeah, yeah. We put a helmet on you, too, so you're... The same thing can happen in your gut. You can have various types of inflammation in the gut that actually cause continuous, covert bleeding that really leads to anemia without having other symptoms. But the symptom, the predominant symptom that calls our attention to such things, to actually start asking questions as a competent practitioner would, is this fatigue.
Yeah.
You know, well, tell me about the fatigue. What time of day? You know, what brings it on? You know, a number of
things. Does anything make it worse?
Does anything
make
it better?
What if it makes it better?
Right.
Yeah.
You ask specific questions that an incompetent practitioner does not ask. A good example is you go to your, I'm going to get off the subject here and go to another. You go to your massage therapist and the massage therapist, and you're getting a massage. Now, a massage therapist is competent in what they do.
Exactly.
And in most states, they're licensed.
Yeah.
And in most states, if they're not licensed, they're breaking the law. And so massage therapists, for the most part, mm-hmm. go to massage therapy school. And so they learn some competence. So you go to your massage, but it's competence in what?
Why massage therapy?
Of course. You go to your massage therapist for help, where their competence mm-hmm. lies. And so as the massage therapist is working on your legs, she notices, or he notices, they notices that your skin is dry and itchy
mm-hmm.
and irritated. And so your massage therapist sprays a special preparation of colloidal copper on there. It's very common. What for? And it helps. It makes it feel better. So between the two of you, you decide, well, if it helps, you know, you sprayed that on there and it helped, why shouldn't I swallow some? Why wouldn't that help from the inside out as well? What's the problem with swallowing colloidal copper?
Same as there is with swallowing colloidal silver.
What is colloidal? Colloidal means that it is a metal suspended in water
yes.
or suspended in some other liquid.
And usually you want it to be especially fine, especially small, so you're looking for, you know, you're looking
really little. It stays in
yeah.
suspension,
yeah.
so you don't have to constantly be shaking it up. Or because the really heavy metal really does fall out, and it doesn't, you know, it's not
yeah.
easy to apply, and it really doesn't do anything anyway.
But my trouble is, as a physiopath, and you wouldn't spray colloidal copper on a dry patch of skin anyway.
You see, I was waiting for you
to
get there.
That's like,
why
would you put something that's inherently drying on dry skin?
Well, why would you put copper on skin?
The only time I would think it's appropriate is if you've got some kind of infection on the skin.
Not copper.
But not copper. That would be silver.
Copper might, if it's a fungal infection.
I don't
yeah,
know.
If it's a yeasty fungal
copper,
infection, sure.
Yeah, copper.
We do that on grapes in the orchard.
Copper
the
has
right.
been known to, with extended use to mildly reduce certain kinds of inflammation.
True, but
that would
do you know why cosmetic companies put copper in their cosmetics?
It's red.
To color the skin. To color the skin. This massage therapist used colloidal copper to assist in the tanning bed. It makes a more beautiful tan when you use ultraviolet tanning.
Sweet.
So.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
You know, this is an actual experience.
All right.
Where somebody with a skin malady speaking to their massage therapist about taking some metal inside their body has taken the advice of an incompetent, a massage therapist. Because they use something, and it just, you know, it was moistening. It felt good on her dry skin because it was moistening. So if it felt good on her dry skin, why wouldn't it be good swallowed?
Have we all forgotten what colloidal metals do inside and outside the body?
Yeah, we'll get back to that a little bit later. Copper is one of those metals that is always heavy. No
yeah.
matter how small
yeah.
it is. If somebody tells you they have colloidal copper, always know that the copper in that colloid is a heavy metal in your body. Heavy metal copper in your body may change the color of your hair. It may change the thickness of your nails, and it may cause you to get a redder, prettier, you know, ruddier tan from the sun or a tanning
yeah.
bed. But also know that too much copper will rob you of your memory.
Mm-hmm.
It will steal from you what you know what we all need, and that is the ability to. It shuts down your immune system mm-hmm. entirely. Copper is not a great thing to take internally.
No.
But here's it's another example. You're going to a massage therapist, and because they're a professional, and they have access to the internet too. You ask them questions beyond the scope of their understanding. Practitioners need to be careful about that. Practitioners need to fess up when they're asked a question or somebody mentions something.
And is outside their scope.
Is outside their scope. The trouble with something like, very often in massage therapy, is that they're not making enough money.
No.
And so they have to add things.
It's a cutthroat industry.
It is.
Massage therapy
and, you know, it's diabolical, the number of people that are being trained to be massage therapists in a lot of cities, because there's no way to support that many practitioners. I mean, there are thousands of them in Springfield, and not very many of them are doing really very well. So they have to add things to their practice in order to make money. So you walk into any massage therapist's office in Missouri that I've ever visited, and you will see supplements. You'll see topical supplements, and you'll see consumable supplements.
Usually some enzymes or some kind of thing.
Yeah.
Enzymes are really popular.
You'll always find something for them to hand to you to swallow, whether you really know what you're talking about or not. That's a shame.
Which effectively bumps their $70 or $80 an hour rate up to about $100, $110 an hour when you buy a bottle.
Yeah, you just got a 20 to 30% raise you got a 20 to 30% raise in what you're competent to
And
provide.
They still only barely scrape by in the industry.
Some do all right. Some do quite well. But they don't do all that well, most of them, in the industry, just as
massage therapists,
because there's just way too much competition. They have to find ways to provide more than what they're trained to do.
Yeah.
They have to be outside of scope, and I feel for them, but it's a troubling thing for somebody who's sick, because who do you trust? I mean, you go to your massage therapist because they make you feel good.
Right.
They're doing a great service for you. That's the person that you ask.
Mm-hmm.
And more often than not, that's the person who will just volunteer anything they learn over the telephone or went to a weekend seminar or what have you.
Yeah.
that is the type of person who has to be working, so they can't actually go to school. So they're going to buy into these training programs that are worthless and just to add to their potential income. It's horrible. It's horrible. And it speaks to the culture more than it does the individual. It really does speak to the culture.
It's a trap, and massage therapists are, especially here in Missouri, massage therapists are a good example, but we see it all across the board for a lot of different practitioners. Chiropractic is another example.
Oh, chiropractic especially.
I mean, you spend, standard in the industry, you spend about 5 to 6, maybe 7 years in a very low rate as a chiropractor.
Right. After you graduate.
After you graduate, yeah. And then once you've reached that kind of tenure in your practice, your rate bumps up.
Because you have more people and there's competition for your time.
Yeah, but you have to be running people through the stalls to survive as a chiropractor.
And so
almost every chiropractor I've ever known has had to do the same thing that massage therapists usually have to do, and that is to introduce whatever popular trends can make the difference in their business.
You're right. It's always a popular trend, too.
Yeah.
Always a popular trend. And with the chiropractors, it's always supplements, usually for bone and joints and, you know, something specific to what they're doing.
Yeah.
But not so much anymore. You'll often go to a chiropractor now and you'll find all kinds of stuff across the board, because they have to step out of their scope of their licensure and their competence and their competence to make a living, because they're graduating so many of them.
It's a cutthroat industry.
It really is. They're doctors. They earned their place in the culture of consumerism. They are the demigods of, you know, of society. They're doctors of chiropractic, and yet it is, I'll never forget when we lived in Utah, going down to the mall and finding 3 chiropractors in the food court offering their services to people who are just sitting there eating lunch.
Yeah,
because they couldn't make a living out there in the real world as a chiropractor. I'll never forget when I broke my back. Gosh, I was 20 years old.
Which time? Yeah, I was
the first
say,
time,
which
when,
time?
I, when I broke my lumbar spine. And I decided not to have orthopedic surgery. And I went to a chiropractor, and I had long discussions with her. She was actually working under another chiropractor of her sort, the kind of chiropractic that she did at the time. And, you know, she was working, she lamented to me, and believe me, this is a long time ago. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 56 years old. This is when I was 20 years old. So we're talking, 34 years ago.
Yeah.
She lamented to me, 2 years out of chiropractic college, that she would have to see somebody every 7 minutes. That if ever a patient was in one of those rooms for more than 15 minutes, she got docked. Her pay was docked by the owner of the clinic, by the doctor, by her mentor, if an individual was in that room for more than 15 minutes. And that was 34 years ago. There are abundantly more chiropractors that have come into the industry. It is more cutthroat than massage therapy.
Mm-hmm.
It's horribly cutthroat because, you know, they have the doctor in front of their name and a license behind it. Excuse me. So here we go. Again, we're talking about practitioners who have to. They're driven beyond scope, the scope of their license, the scope of their competence, in order to make it in the cutthroat world. I'll never forget a certain practitioner in Idaho where I lived whose only background was in iridology. Now, iridology is looking at the iris of the eye and finding everything that is wrong with you from the iris of the eye, and with that information they prescribe what herbs and supplements and everything you need to do from the iris of your eye.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not going to deny that the iris and the fingerprint and you know, a number of different things on your body may not be used as indicators of general constitutional issues. It may be so, but anytime you or any person takes a magic bullet approach and suggests that looking at one thing in your body, if I've got a broken ankle and I go into the doc with a broken ankle and he looks at my eye and decides to give me a liver cleanse and a parasite cleanse because of what my eye says, you know, more often than not, he's going to miss the ankle entirely unless I'm on crutches.
Uh-huh.
That's a problem of competence, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's totally a problem of competence.
Well, iridology is one detection method.
A competent
practitioner is going to use as many detection methods as they can possibly.
Hopefully, a competent practitioner will do that. But I'll never forget that guy. He had a large clientele of people, and he, you know, was a multi-leveler in several of the corporate herb companies. Mm-hmm. And as a practitioner, he made good money. But his wife still had to work to support the house. You know, so he was driven out of taking pictures of the eyes and into a lot of other things. And it's very problematical because in my practice in Idaho, I knew a lot of people who came to me from him because of what he did to them with herbs that then had to be corrected.
Yeah.
So let's go down this list again. We're at lunch. We're back at lunch. And let me just – let's talk about the problem with, you know, going on the internet and finding a solution to every symptom, because we see this as well. We find incompetent practitioners who are so anxious to solve all your problems and believe so completely that technology can and does, and the corporations have all the answers, that they will take every symptom that you mention and they'll go on the internet and they'll look at.
Yep.
So go on the internet and look up sleeplessness.
Where's my handy dandy smartphone?
You've got it out.
I always have it.
Sleeplessness. We've already talked about anemia. We've already talked about chronic fatigue. Are there other reasons that a person might have the symptom of sleeplessness? Now, sleeplessness is not insomnia.
No.
It's just, you know, not it's not not being able to sleep, because you talk to people who complain of sleeplessness, and they're not saying I never sleep.
Uh-huh.
It's that they just don't seem to feel rested from sleep. They just can't seem to get enough sleep.
Yeah.
So what does your internet say are some of the reasons for sleeplessness?
Let's see.
I'm going to give him a little time to use his
Usually
patterns.
Self-diagnosable, this treatment can help.
No, wait a minute.
Condition can't be cured.
Usually self-diagnosable. Sleeplessness is self-diagnosable. You know, that is more than generous. Yeah, I mean, who's going to know more than you that you can't sleep very well? That you don't get good sleep?
Right.
Oh, come on.
Poor sleep habits, depression, anxiety, lack of exercise, chronic illness, or certain medications can contribute to insomnia.
So across the...
Difficulty falling or staying asleep, not feeling well rested after sleep.
That's sleeplessness. So across the lunch table, there's a high potential there to actually make some very significant mistakes if you're not competent to ask the right questions.
Oh, yeah.
If all you're doing is going on to the internet to find answers. Let's go on to the next one then. Brain fog.
Ooh,
we hear a lot of people talk about
brain fog,
and it's a real thing.
I like this one.
It's a real thing. I mean, you're sitting there, and, you know, it's not just that you forgot your lunch companion's name. It's that you find yourself completely lost in the moment. Not, you know, for a moment, you kind of lose yourself in the whole environment.
I don't know how many times I have heard of people being prescribed things like Melissa or Skullcap or Kava or something for brain fog. Some practitioner, this practitioner or that practitioner. But here's a small list of some very particular diseases or disorders or syndromes that produce that symptom. Almost always, bar none.
This is the short list.
Chronic fatigue syndrome.
Thank you, Dr. Wheel.
Yeah. Fibromyalgia, brain fog.
Brain fog.
Dementia, yeah.
brain fog.
Yeast infections, brain fog. Multiple sclerosis produces brain fog. Irritable bowel syndrome.
Really?
Yeah. And other less common, well, they're actually very common, but less severe, such as electrolyte imbalances, hormone imbalances, medications.
Right.
I mean, these are way more common. But, I mean, brain fog is a really common, very vague symptom.
And you can be swallowing a whole bunch of stuff that isn't doing you any good. But
nope. But
what if you decided to take a Kava Melissa Skullcap combination for your confusion, your brain fog? What are you actually swallowing when you take Kava Melissa Skullcap?
Dude, I would sleep so well. Oh my gosh.
Well, Kava is an almost narcotic, hallucinogenic at higher doses, sedative. So,
which is why it's only ever given in the form of these little tea packets.
But because does brain fog mean that you are hyperactive?
No.
That you are hysterical?
Why would you need a nervine sedative?
A nervine sedative. Why? Melissa.
Melissa
is a no-brainer.
Yeah, well, Melissa is purported to be, and it's pretty compelling research, a neuroprotectant.
Neuroprotectant. And so since brain fog is obviously happening in the brain, not according to your symptom disease list, but obviously happening in the brain, we have to suggest something for your brain.
Right. Sadly, you've got to eat about a truckload of the stuff in order to get a therapeutic dose.
You have to get it extracted at the right time in the right way,
right,
and prepared in the right way, and then delivered into your body in the right way, or Melissa is useless.
Right.
It's good for your breath, and that's about it. You know, lemon balm is lemon balm. How about Skullcap?
Skullcap, following the same line of thought as Melissa. Skullcap, everybody knows Skullcap is for the nerves and for the brain. And if you've got brain fog, it's going to be stress.
But what is Skullcap to the brain? To the nerves. What is its mechanism of action?
It's a nervine sedative.
It's a sedative.
Yep.
sedative in high dosage. And
now, what's the big deal about brain fog? It's an inability to focus, inability to concentrate, inability to really perform a cognitive
function.
It's mild
confusion. Well. It's mild confusion.
Why on earth would you give a sedative in any form to someone with brain fog?
This is
everywhere, out there, all the time.
It's mind-boggling. It's mind-boggling. This is what is given by incompetence for brain fog before they even know what the cause of the brain fog is. And brain fog, that mild confusion, the inability to focus,
concentrate,
cognitive, remember. Stuff like this, it's like you said, this is a symptom of so many functional disorders.
Yep.
That need a different treatment entirely. A different treatment. MS. Would you necessarily? Well, let's not do MS. Let's do irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah.
Irritable bowel syndrome. What will happen to the person with IBS when you give them a sedative?
They're going to go to sleep.
Their bowel will be sedated.
Wick Orange slap.
It doesn't make any sense, does it? This is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. You've got to find out what is the cause of the irritable bowel. You've got to get at that inflammation.
Yeah. And when it comes to brain fog and irritable bowel syndrome, the brain fog is usually the product of irritable bowel syndrome related anemia and electrolyte imbalance.
And the garbage that is leaking back from the irritable bowel syndrome, leaky gut into the bloodstream.
Yep.
Okay, so here's a huge area where people can go so desperately wrong. So desperately wrong. What about brain fog with fibromyalgia? What happens when you give a sedative to someone with fibromyalgia?
They're going to go to sleep because they're already in pain and they're already exhausted.
And they're going to become less active. They're going to become more immobile.
Yep.
And they're going to move less, so that every time that they do move, they will not be functionally fixing anything. You'll have more micro tearing.
Yeah.
You're not getting at the cause of fibromyalgia by giving anybody a sedative.
Nope.
Let's go on. Muscle cramps.
Ooh, here we go. Magnesium.
Okay, magnesium and potassium.
That comes right off the top of the head.
Yes,
everybody knows magnesium and potassium for muscle cramps.
Oh, I know, and doctors prescribe oral magnesium all the time. What's the problem with that?
Diabetes of
the blowhole. That's right. In order to take enough magnesium orally.
Yeah.
You have to take so much that it's terribly laxative.
Yes.
And so you don't get
enough
to help.
I think we addressed magnesium once before on the show.
We did. Yeah.
It's hygroscopic. Hygroscopic. It draws water to it. So
right.
Whatever organic tissue it's next to, it's pulling water to it. Magnesium is never found alone in the body. It's always bound to hydrogens or sulfurs or that kind of thing.
Unless a person is taking magnesium through the skin, I've taken magnesium for muscle cramps, but it's because I was terribly, terribly dehydrated,
right?
And I didn't take it without a whole bunch of water. I've been working out.
Yeah.
I also used sodium and I also used potassium. I didn't take magnesium alone, and I eat plenty of calcium, probably way too much calcium.
Yeah.
So I've got a pretty good grip on the electrolyte imbalance that can cause cramping.
Yeah, but see, that's a form of muscle cramping.
But it's not
the
only
one
thing.
One form of muscle cramping.
Yeah,
one thing that produces muscle cramping.
What else produces muscle cramping?
Well, injury for
one. So what if a person...
Muscular foreshortening for another.
Right. What if somebody is long recovered, for example, from an injury, and they're months... It's not something that you would continue to talk about.
Right.
But you're getting muscle cramps. Going on the internet, what first comes up when you go on the internet, on the phone, you know, because we all have these smartphones. We have every single bit of information about everything at our fingertips.
Muscle cramp so, remedy.
Well, or cause a muscle cramp.
Well, causes, if you look for the cause,
so you're getting
of
it
muscle
all
cramps,
so let's remedy.
Big list.
Yeah, let's. What do you do for muscle cramps? The first thing that comes up is always the best thing, right? Because it's the most asked thing. Now, here's a key issue. On the internet, the first thing that comes up is not the best thing necessarily. It's just the thing that is more consistently asked than any other thing. But, you know, we prioritize everything in a consumer society. So the first thing on the list is the bestest. It's the mustest and the bestest. And that's how we win civil wars, right?
Yeah. But see, the trouble here is, with muscle cramps, Mayo Clinic finished a series of researches into muscle cramps of different kinds.
Right.
So if you just Google muscle cramp remedies...
What do you get?
You get, for the first time, and I don't know how long, a piece of very good information about muscle cramps.
Oh, let's hear it.
Stretch and massage.
Unbelievable.
Stretch the cramped muscle and gently rub it to help it relax.
Well, that's a no-brainer. That's what we've always done, right?
For a calf cramp, put your weight on your cramped leg and bend your knee slightly.
Stretch the muscle. Yep.
Apply heat or cold. Use a warm towel or heating pad on tense or tight muscles.
Okay, so we're not talking about tense or tight muscles. We're talking about muscle cramps. We're talking about the Charlie horse. Charlie horse. Okay. We're at lunch. We're eating our hamburger, and we get a Charlie horse. Oh crap! I've got a Charlie. Hold that thought. I've got to, pinch my upper lip. Do all the things. Think happy thoughts. Live from heart. So what do I do about that? What remedy is most often prescribed by the internet?
I'm going to look here.
It's going to be...
Got to prevent your electrolyte imbalances.
It's
going
to be
the very
minerals.
First thing pops up, potassium, magnesium, and sodium.
Potassium, magnesium, sodium. Now, what if a person is on a calcium blocker? A statin drug.
Well, they're screwed.
Right, you have just caused a real issue. Here, take this mineral complex. I wouldn't even think to ask you what drugs you might be on.
See, there's something, you wouldn't give a whole bunch of magnesium and a whole bunch of potassium to somebody on a calcium blocker.
You wouldn't.
Because it would cause it.
It directly causes
electrolyte imbalance.
Which can actually exacerbate
muscle
Let's
cramps.
Just go on down. High blood pressure. Get your phone out.
I don't want to.
You don't want to do this anymore.
I've done this exercise so many times with people that I know what the result is going to be. If you are not conversant in anatomy and physiology, the basic physiological processes, and you go looking for the remedies to what somebody tells you they have.
It is a bad, bad policy, and yet that is what we run into all the time.
Yeah, I mean, are we dealing with high blood pressure due to bad cholesterol count, or are we dealing with high blood pressure because of the heart damage?
Do you have a heart disease already?
Do you have heart disease? Yeah. Is it because of thrombocyte aggregation?
Are you,
I mean,
overweight? Is it because of your weight? You know, are you, experiencing a lot of stress? Are you in fight or flight mode all the time? There are a ton of things that can cause high blood pressure if you do this thing that we're so apt to do all the time, that we see all the time. Get on your phone, the source of all information. You know, you're more apt than not, if you have not taken the time to obtain competence, you're more apt than not to hurt somebody than to help them.
But I've got to tell you, one of the biggest kicks, it feels like a kick in the gut every time I hear this, is for someone to describe flu symptoms and to have their friend or practitioner give them a bottle of colloidal silver.
Right.
I mean, when it comes to substances, when it comes to proper treatment of disease, and all you have to go on is someone describing flu-like symptoms, Not that they've been actually diagnosed with this kind of flu or that kind of flu or this kind of infection or that kind of infection. They're just presenting the symptoms of it, and you give something like colloidal silver to that person to swallow, that's worse than giving sedatives to somebody with a brain fog.
Yeah, think of the consequences. Think of the consequences. Colloidal silver is incredibly effective at doing what it does.
Yes.
Colloidal silver, if properly made, if it's good quality mm-hmm. colloidal silver, kills, and kills indiscriminately.
Yeah, and there's been an argument amongst a few of my colleagues as to whether colloidal silver is actually effective, and why is it effective in this case but not effective in that case, and because it's not effective over here, it must mean that something else was happening in the cases where it wasn't
effective. Right, because colloidal silver is always effective. Right?
I've got to disagree with some of my colleagues that make that argument and therefore throw colloidal silver right out the window. A good colloidal silver is basically a hydrosol solution of silver oxide.
Silver oxide is antimicrobial.
Rust, and it is exactly highly antimicrobial. Doesn't matter what microbe, if it's friendly microbe or unfriendly microbe.
Right. And
let's not forget what colloidal silver is. It's a killer. So you're putting a killer in your body. And I talked to so many people who use colloidal silver to prevent the flu. It was never meant to be a preventative.
Never, back in the days,
some history on colloidal silver. Anybody can look this stuff up. Colloidal silver was really common a couple hundred years ago. And especially used by doctors.
Oh, yeah, up to 100.
A lot of times.
100 years ago or even. Yeah, as an application to wounds uh-huh. in a powder form, silver was simply
always
amazing.
Always used. And then as time went by, the medical industry moved away from using colloidal silver, not because it was simply ineffective. It wasn't some folk medicine.
Right.
They moved away from colloidal silver because the long-term detrimental effects long-term of colloidal silver when treating disease were far greater than using high concentrations of vitamin C and merely washing wounds with alcohol.
Oh, right, yeah.
And when hydrogen peroxide was produced.
The Lister method, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Once those methods were in place,
It was much safer to use those
because back then it was common knowledge and not a matter of publication. It was just common knowledge that you got sick if you kept using it for too long.
Right, and the sickness that you got was different than the sickness that you're taking it for.
Right.
Usually it was diarrhea.
Now, advocates and the major promoters of colloidal silver back in the 70s, the 60s, 70s, and the 80s completely disregarded that little bit of eclectic knowledge with
right.
regard to colloidal silver.
That cultural knowledge went under the table.
It wasn't a published matter. Doctors simply knew it.
Right.
You know, this is stuff they knew about silver.
Yep. And if it was published, it was swept under the rug because you can't sell a thing
mm-mm.
big time if there may be possible complications.
Right.
Here's a complication. A friend of mine here in Springfield raises fish in an aquaponic system, and so do I. And it was winter, and in wintertime here in the Midwest, we've got to invest in heating for our fish.
Yeah.
They get cold, especially when it's tilapia.
We use tropical fish.
Yeah, tilapia is a tropical to semi-tropical.
So tender.
They get below 55, 56 degrees, and you're going to start seeing an immune system that tends to shut down.
Right.
So they get
yeah.
sick with all kinds of stuff, especially certain of the fungus diseases that affect fish. And they'll wipe out your whole population, and that's a bad thing. So he was having fish get sick, and he's got some investment in his fish. I don't think
yeah.
I've ever seen tilapia as big as his tilapia. These are really good. I mean, they're almost pets.
Yeah.
Okay, so he's got a problem. He's got to fix this. His fish are sick. And he used colloidal silver, and they got well. It was the only thing that got them well.
He made his own.
Yeah, he made
his own colloidal silver with silver coins.
And it killed the fungus
yeah.
and the fish. You know, he got the temperature
mm-hmm.
back up. The fish did okay, and they lived through the winter. I had the same thing happen. My heating system was inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
My fish were getting cold. They started to get these diseases, especially that fungal one. But I was raising these fish to produce food for an aquaponic system in a greenhouse. Quite a lot of plants were involved. And these
right.
were new
yeah.
growths. It wasn't cold enough to stop growing plants. It was just a problem for the fish, right? We weren't in the freezing time of year. Just had a little problem keeping the water hot for a little while. So I used colloidal silver, and the fish got well.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, that particular disease got well, but my plants all died. Now, it was not the colloidal silver that killed the plants. Let's be clear on that. The colloidal silver did not kill the plants, but it did kill the bacteria in the gravel in which I was growing those plants that was converting the ammonia from the fish into plant food. So because
the plants literally starved.
They starved. Because I killed the fungus that was killing my fish with colloidal silver, I also killed all the probiotic in the gravel that was feeding my plants, and my entire crop failed.
Yep.
Here's a problem. We are just like that. We can use colloidal silver, and if we're injudicious, if we use it as a preventive or we use it too long,
mm-hmm.
we can use it to stop a particular organism dead in its tracks because it is strong medicine, but understand and realize that it does not know how to stop. It kills every organism, microorganism that it comes in contact with.
And it does not leave the body.
Like no.
Any other metal, whether it's nanoparticles
it can
or
build
larger
up.
Particles,
yep.
Silver builds up.
Now look, if you're only using it when you're sick, in all likelihood, you are never going to get enough silver in you to ever be a problem.
But it was never supposed to be used in preventive medicine.
Right. Now there was
to be used.
You will recall
in the during time of infection. Seldom was it ever given internally, epileptically either. It was always used as a wash over infections and rashes.
The only time silver
open wounds.
The only time silver was used in water, for example, was in the water barrels
mm-hmm.
that brought water off the roof.
Kept them fresh
they
longer.
They put a silver coin in the water, and that silver coin deteriorated because of the electrolyte situation in the water and the transference of metals that happens. And because of that, the water didn't foul and there was not as much cholera in people who used that method. Okay, so you remember when you were younger, we lived in a place and there were four houses that were joined by a gymnasium. You remember the place?
Oh, yeah, the complex.
The complex was a crazy place.
It was built to survive the
Y2K.
No, it's even before that. The complex itself was built to survive the impending nuclear war that was to be the outcome of the Cold War.
Oh, that's true. That's right.
Yeah.
And then it was refurbished for Y2K, and then Y2K didn't happen.
Yeah.
When we lived there, across the gymnasium in one of the other houses, so these were not apartments, remember, these were houses built.
Yeah, four houses.
On the corners.
And
of
two
this,
apartments of built this, on this.
Right, road. It was quite the place. It was kind of fun, actually.
Big
but,
houses, too.
Yeah, lovely, lovely big houses. You remember that in one of the apartments across the way, there was a man who made his living making colloidal silver.
Don.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don Collier.
Yep.
And he made colloidal silver that was not like you normally see, because he sold it down to Mexico where there are no regulations.
No.
Sold it by the 5-gallon bucket, and I'll tell you what, there was so much silver that the water was gray.
Yeah.
It was gray. You could see the silver. And it was colloidal. It was in suspension. You will not see, safe colloidal silver. You don't see the silver.
You shouldn't see the silver at all.
So what he was doing is he was selling it in bulk and they were diluting.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so fine. He drank his own colloidal silver to stay well. And you'll recall, whenever he came in the house, your brother ran screaming from the room.
Ah, poor kid.
Why?
Because he's such a nice guy.
He was a heck of a nice guy,
he was fun to talk to and play with. Couldn't
remember
anything.
He had no memory.
Uh-uh.
He had bronchitis that would never go away.
Nope, he couldn't stay on any single task. He bounced around all over the place.
Right.
Never finished any one thing except making his colloidal silver.
He had lack of sensation in his hands and feet. Not tingling, not prickly heat, not pain, but no sensation for no reason in the pads of his fingers and his palms and the bottoms of
his
feet.
His skin was the strangest shade of blue-gray.
Blue-gray. And my young son, thought he was the Tin Man. He thought he was a robot. And he was young. And when he came in the door...
We're just a bunch of rotten homeschooled kids.
I mean, he just...
With overactive imagination.
He would scream. He would start crying, and he would leave the house.
Yeah.
He'd go outside while Don was in the house. Okay, so he took the stuff in excess. But the thing that got me was there is no way, if colloidal silver is to be used as a preventative, there is no way in heaven or hell that he should have had persistent chronic bronchitis.
And then eventually he had cancer.
He died of cancer, yeah. But the bronchitis should have been cured by the colloidal silver, right?
Because it should have been, yeah. Except organisms learn how to live. They adapt with the presence of silver, like they do with copper.
Organisms are highly adaptive. Yep. So that is why we don't use that kind of remediation all the time. He's a great example. He's an obsessive, excessive example. But he's still a great example.
Extreme examples are very useful. A less extreme example has more to do with yeast infections.
You
might remember this. We met, she was working with you at the time. Anyway, this lady, she had a yeast infection on her legs and her ankle, and she was applying colloidal silver. And the colloidal silver, the infection started to go away, everything was all good, and it was just about gone, and then she stopped with the colloidal silver, and then it blew up all over her leg.
Right, it did.
Because the yeast had survived the silver. Yeast is an extremely resilient organism.
It can be, yeah, really, really, really.
And it can adapt fairly effectively. I mean, how many different kinds of yeast are there in the world? There's huge amounts, and they all change per ferment to ferment a different batch of yeast.
Yep.
But she stopped the colloidal silver, and there was no competition for the yeast.
Right.
And so it bloomed up 10 times worse than it was before.
Yeah, because she had used so much of an antimicrobial on her skin. And here's the thing. How many massage therapists, how many chiropractors, how many, reflexologists, how many iridologists, how many...
Natural health coaches and...
Coaches
and
counselors.
Certified natural health professionals.
How many of them prescribe colloidal silver and don't know how to properly use it? Well, most, because where they get their information is exactly where you just got your information. It's from the god of information, the Android. It's from the phone.
Or the iPod.
It's from
the
phone.
Yeah.
So when you go to the god of information, the tech god in the sky, I'm not sure where that...
Oh, praise Lady Google.
Yeah, when you go down on your knees, and in this case, you actually do bow your head.
Yeah, it hurts.
It's a crazy posture you see out there with everybody bowing their heads, looking at their phones.
Yeah.
When you bow your head and pray to the phone for information, the information can very, very often lead you completely down the primrose path. And who is providing the information that you're getting?
Oh, everybody, everything, anybody that posts anything, that saves and uploads any piece of information, good or garbage, doesn't matter.
It's
all up there, and it stays there forever.
It's up there, but where do we get our information about remedies and supplements?
From the very same people that are sticking their noses down on their phone.
No, we don't get the information. We get them from corporate providers.
Well, there's that.
They are dumping information constantly onto the internet to be first in line. That's the strategy.
Uh-huh.
You hire a consultant to help you get first in line on the search engines.
Uh-huh.
You pay good money so that you're first in line because everybody knows that we Americans are not going to click more than 3 or 4 times on a subject.
This is true. This is totally true.
It's inconvenient. So... the first couple of clicks.
Which is why I have seen so many people scroll through an article and scroll through some of the best information they could get.
Right on
past.
Right
on past to the list of supplements they need to buy.
Yep. We are so addicted to the convenience of tech that we fail to learn. we fail to learn how to read an article. We lose the ability to read an article and get information out of it because these guys have this all figured out. They know that we're going to click on the most popular, the three most popular, and we're going to scroll down to the answer.
Yep.
Because all we need is the byline and the answer at the bottom. We don't need to know anything else.
Nope.
And what is fascinating to me is that there are so many new modalities, so many new technological devices that are doing exactly the same thing for practitioners. You don't have time to ask these questions, and so we're going to make our computer do it for you.
Yep.
All you need to do is hold on to this copper rod, or all you need to do is put your hand on this cradle.
Yep.
All you need to do is sit there while I spin my pendulum and put my magnets on you for whatever emotion is attracting this or attracting. You don't have to have competence of any kind because all these teachers and trainers are out there telling you how to do this thing without needing to know anything. I'll never forget.
It's like no wonder the industry is so cutthroat.
Oh, and where does it come from? The tendency, the pattern language is coming from our corporate providers.
Yep.
So we are in education, most of education is mimicking what is required by the providers of products.
Yeah.
The education is feeding the providers of products. So you have so-called healers who are coming out of school who only know how to sell pills.
Yep.
They are pushers. They're nothing but drug dealers. And they're hurting people. It's a terrible state of affairs. A terrible state of affairs. I'll never forget the lady out west who is one of these intuitives.
Uh-huh.
Now, I'm not denying that there are people who have this spiritual gift.
I think to some degree and to some major degrees in a lot of cases, everybody does.
There's this thing called intuition, and some people have an absolute spiritual gift, but it has been commercialized.
And capitalized on, too.
I walked up on her giving advice to some poor sick soul, and I said, do you know, I'm sorry, but, you know, and we were close, you know, her kids, our kids, and blah, blah, blah. This is after the fact, a professional is not going to walk up in your face. a professional is never going to walk up in your face and say, no, I don't. I disagree with that.
No.
You know, or stop doing that thing. It bothers me. A professional is going to take the person aside after the fact, talk about it professionally, privately.
Yeah. Don't want to make a scene with your differences of opinion.
Oh, a sick person is...
They have enough to deal
they're
with.
They're anxious
okay.
enough. Yeah, they're anxious enough. Yeah. They have enough, as you say, to deal with as it is. You don't need to add that by going up there and saying you're full of crap. I would never, ever do that. Ever. We had that happen this afternoon in our own office. A fellow practitioner comes in and says, you people keep it down. I'm trying to do my work in front of the clients. You know, the most unprofessional way to behave in a clinic that I can think of. But anyway, I took her aside and I said, you know, there are a lot of things that could cause that particular symptom. You really probably ought to ask more questions about that rather than just knee-jerk say, here, eat this mud pie and you'll get better. Have faith in me. Her response has stuck with me ever since. Her response was, I don't need to know. The angels tell me. The angels know, and so I don't need to. Or the higher power knows, so I don't need to. The greater good understands, and so I don't need to have that competence. Well, that's bull roar, isn't it? That's absolute hogwash. Absolute hogwash.
I've seen a lot of people
you will
hurt by that.
Yeah, you will hurt people. You guaranteed you will hurt people. And do you think they're going to come back for your opinion later?
No.
They'll
come to people like me who have to work hard to put them back together.
And they'll say to you, I went to so-and-so, and the angels told her what I needed, or that she has an intuitive power from the high, from the source, and she told me this or that, and all I, and you know, I didn't get better, I got sicker. You know, that I'm happy for everybody who follows a medical intuitive and gets better.
Yeah.
But I haven't met very many. I've met a lot of medical intuitives who claim, who talk about the people who get better.
I have,
but the only experiences I have are those who come to my office, and there are numerous.
Yeah. Now you can, legion. You can read a lot about them. You can read about numerous success stories. But I've met as many or more victims of bad prescriptions.
Everybody,
as I've read about good ones.
Everybody involved in natural medicine has experiences with people who have been helped by medical intuitives. I mean, our spiritual background, our ancestors, there were people among our ancestors who had the gift, who could literally ask your body, could see into your body. That would be a medical intuitive. But that's not what you're taught as a medical intuitive today, are you?
Mm-hmm. No, I took some classes on medical intuition.
And what were you taught?
I was taught that one of the first things to remember about medical intuition was that the first thought that runs into your head, the first odd or unusual or seemingly misplaced thought,
the flash,
when you're concentrating on someone, is the intuition that you need to focus on.
Right.
That it has the answer in it, and that if you can decipher that answer, you have
solve the problem.
You have solved the problem. You have received that medical intuition.
And the sick person can feel confident swallowing whatever you have interpreted from the insight that comes into your mind.
Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. That's because, you know, that denies, or that doesn't deny, but that forgets the actual processes of perception.
Correct.
Never ever forget that five people can stand in the room and see the same thing and describe it
five
totally
differently. Ways. Yeah.
You know, that's crazy. And that's medical intuitive. Again, I cannot dispute that there are those who have the gift. But the lady that I was talking to who said, I don't have to know anything, she is a blotch. She's a blotch on all true medical intuitives, because the one thing that I have learned speaking to those who actually have the gift,
the true medical intuitives,
they are obsessed with learning everything, because you said it yourself, they have to interpret the insight. How much better can they interpret the insight if they know how the body functions?
Some of the most effective, the most potent medical intuitives that I've ever known, in the few years I've been in the industry, I've met a few of them, are those that use their gifts not to diagnose what's going on, but to ask the better questions.
Ask the better questions. Assist the body in its intrinsic ability to heal itself. That's asking the better questions.
And
right?
There, most of these few that I've met are obsessed with mechanisms of action, anatomy, physiology.
Oh, yeah.
They can't get enough of how the body works.
Yeah. For one thing, their intuitive sense tends to make them more inquisitive and insatiable.
Uh-huh.
They just can't get
they cannot know enough.
Yeah.
They
No, it's not, I don't have to know because the great mind in the sky knows for me, and all I need to do is grab out of the... I'll never forget.
It's that they have a connection to the biggest, fattest thing in front of them, and it's the universe.
The database is huge.
And they want to know everything about it.
Right.
They'll never be done learning.
How much better at ascertaining the truth of what you're seeing and how it applies to the sufferer if you have filled your brain with pertinent information about the sufferer?
You ask better questions.
You do ask the better
questions.
Your
intuition serves you better.
Yeah, and it serves the sufferer better.
Yep.
Those are the successful. Those are the successful medical intuitives.
It's intuition that causes you to go back in time, to research a thing, back to where it comes from, how it's made. I mean, homeopathy is a good example. Colloidal silver is a good example. How many people today know where colloidal silver comes from? How other how many people today know what traditional Hahnemann homeopathy is?
Not very many homeopaths.
Not very many. Not very many in Missouri, anyway.
Well, they call all natural healing homeopathy, so
yeah.
That gives you an idea of what they really know about it. Not a whole heck of a lot. And so it's a dangerous thing. We decry the incompetence of practitioners all the time, and we're dedicated. We have dedicated ourselves, and we're obsessed with the idea of creating a new level of competence
yeah.
in the people that we're training. I'll tell you what, people who come out of the University of Nemenha are not trained the way I was trained. My training as a naturopath in herbal medicine was so incomplete and so unbelievably inept that I don't think it qualified me to do anything. I had to go back and restudy everything.
Mm-hmm.
I was terribly dissatisfied with what I had learned.
Even the dark field microscopy, you had to go back and take 2 years.
Two
sections of the hematology at the University of Utah.
You know, I was not satisfied. I had to take the extra courses. And it kept me away from home quite a lot. You'll remember me coming home at 3 o'clock in the morning. Well, that's part of the reason why.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then you'd get up at 6 because you had a seminar 4 hours away.
Right.
I remember those.
Those are rough times. But I wasn't. I was not satisfied with the pop training.
No.
I was not satisfied with fads and trends and gimmicks and manufacturers' statements and claims. I just wasn't satisfied. I'm still not satisfied. So our graduates, especially of our apothecary program, our apprentices, our journeymen, and our masters will come out of it with hands-on training
yeah.
and true competence, because we're dedicated to the changing of this pattern language, the changing of natural medicine. The guts and plumbing of it have to change.
And even the paradigm shifts in using systems like the medicine wheel and herbology together, medicine wheel and physiopathy together.
Right.
I mean, you can't do these things without cultivating and developing an inquisitive mind.
You have to constantly be
and
learning.
And digging deep into mechanisms of action and not forgetting what causes things to do the things you want them to do.
Right. And, you know, what happens then is you're always asked, well, how does it do that thing? And you may have studied, you may have read, you may have some background and competence in it, but invariably you're going to forget.
You're going to remember everything.
You know, what it does is it drives you back to the books.
Yep.
It drives you back to your mentors. It drives you back to revisit information over and over again. Every time you revisit information,
you learn
study,
a whole lot more.
You learn a new thing.
Yeah.
You learn a new thing. And that's what we're trying to instill. So we're going to instill in our trained practitioners. That's what the University of Nemenha is about. And that brings us to 2 minutes down, end of our... You know, we were talking earlier about, you know, we don't have to spend an hour and a half every single time.
I just kind of smile.
If you are, we have just opened a new section of our apothecary apprenticeship program. And if you have an interest in the kind of natural healing, plant medicine based, that we have been talking about, please give us a call at
417-808-0538.
That's 417-808-0538. We're training people hands-on right here in the office in Springfield. For people who live in Springfield, but there is a wonderful thing about technology, and that is Skype.
Yeah,
video conferencing.
Cool stuff with
video conferencing allows us to be right in the office with you. It's like you're in our office.
Yeah,
getting one-on-one training with the smallest possible class size. So you know, if you have an interest in this kind of training, and you know, you don't have anything like this where you live, give us a call, 417-808-0538, and get involved with the University of Nemenha's Apothecary, Master Apothecary Program. So that's the end of our radio show tonight. This is Cloud Pilar and saying, walk sacred, talk sacred, walk sacred.
Good night.